Chapter 7, Afternoon and Evening. In the year 1867, my father had the happiness of going once more to Greece on an errand of mercy. When Greece won her freedom, the island of Crete had been left under Turkish rule. But now the islanders, a brave and hardy race, had risen against their tyrants and made a gallant struggle to win their freedom too. As in the case of Greece so many years before, there was great suffering among the women and children. My father was now an old man, but he felt that he could not let them suffer while he had strength to help. He called a meeting of kind people in Boston, told them the sad story of the brave Cretans, and called on them for aid. It was generously given, and once more he sailed for Greece, carrying food for the hungry and clothing for the naked. My mother went with him, as did my sister Julia and I, and we all helped in giving out the clothes, many of which had been made by Boston schoolgirls. It was a delightful time for all of us. The Turks were angry and forbade my father to go to Crete, setting a price on his head, but he went all the same and came back safe. Once, indeed, he came very near shipwreck. He was in a wretched little steamboat, the machinery of which broke down, leaving the vessel helpless. They drifted about all night, at the mercy of the waves. With the morning a breeze sprang up, but the captain and crew of the tug, for it was nothing more, were only the more frightened, and wept and wailed, calling on the saints to help them. My father, however, tore down a piece of the awning, and with the help of a passenger, held it up by way of a sail, and so brought the vessel safe into port. The brave Cretans did not succeed in winning their freedom that year, though they fought hard for it. But now they have their own government and are prosperous and thriving. So long as he lived, my father never ceased to work for the good of others. He has been called the servant of humanity because he gave his whole life for the service of his fellow men. In the year 1876, this great and good life ended. My mother had still many long years before her, and she continued to fill them full of good and lovely and helpful deeds. She did not give up her studies, but she added to them all kinds of other work. We children were now grown up and married, so she had much more time at her disposal. She felt that the women of our country and of all countries might make their lives fuller and freer and broader than they had been. So she founded or helped to found many clubs and associations of women, some for work and some for study, all based upon the idea of helping women to help themselves. She felt that women should have the right to vote and worked ardently in this cause. She wrote many essays and lectures and went about the country delivering them, and wherever she went, she was gladly welcomed as the author of the famous battle hymn and as an earnest lover of her kind. The words of wisdom and cheer that she spoke gave help and comfort and strength to very many people, and her name became more and more beloved. She felt that war was one of the most terrible evils, and that women ought to fight against it with the weapons of peace. So for this cause, too, she spoke often and well, and for it she wrote more than one poem. My mother's poems fill several volumes, and some of them have become household words. Here is one which I always especially loved, a parable. I sent a child of mine today. I hope you used him well. Now, Lord, no visitor of yours is waited at my bell. The children of the millionaire run up and down our street. I glory in their well-combed hair, their dress and trim complete. But yours would in a chariot come, with thoroughbreds so gay and little merry men and maids to cheer him on his way. Stood then no child before your door? The Lord persistent said. Only a ragged beggar boy with rough and frowsy head. The dirt was crusted on his skin. His muddy feet were bare. The cook gave fiddles from within. I cursed his coming there. What sorrow, silvered with a smile, slides o'er the face divine? What tenderest whisper thrills rebuke? The beggar boy was mine. As the long golden afternoon of my mother's life deepened towards sunset, with every year she grew dearer and wiser and more beautiful. You have all seen pictures of her taken in recent years with the quaint, pretty cap crowning her silver hair, and with every year more and more people came to her from all parts of the country and from foreign countries just for the pleasure of looking in her face and hearing her voice. They wrote to her, too, from all over the world. Many merely asked for her autograph, but there were others who asked and expected strange things. She always tried to answer every letter, to send her autograph to every man, woman, and child who asked for it. But as she grew older and less strong, she could not keep up with the flood of requests that poured in upon her. As it was, I suppose she wrote more letters in a year than many people do their whole lives long. She never seemed to be in haste. The habit of work was so strong in her that she could work rapidly and quietly. She knew what to say and how to say it, and so her words were never wasted, and there were never too many of them. She kept up her studies, reading Greek every morning, holding fast to the ancient wisdom, and yet keeping abreast of all the new thought and welcoming new light wherever it shone. She loved to visit schools and talk to the children. Some children who read these words may have seen and heard her, and they will never forget it, I'm sure. Hundreds of children wrote to her, and she answered their letters whenever it was possible for her to do so. On her 90th birthday, she received a letter from an old gentleman in New York, reminding her how, nearly 70 years before, she had picked him up, a little orphan boy, 5 years old, and had found a home for him in the orphan asylum. She was a young girl then. She had done the kind deed and forgotten it, but he had never forgotten. Some of her best poems were written during the last 10 years of her life, several of them when she was over 90 years old, and she did not cease writing till the very end. In her later years, a pleasant and graceful custom grew up in Boston, the city she loved so well, and spread to other cities. When she entered a theater or hall, the audience would rise unbidden to their feet and remain standing till she had taken her seat. This never failed to surprise her, for she was as modest as she was beloved. She had grandchildren and great-grandchildren, and was never happier than when she could gather them round her. Never was such a wonderful and delightful grandmother seen, or so they thought. She was as ready to play with them as to talk of high and grave matters with the wise and good men and women who came from afar to see her, and she loved to sit down at the piano and play and sing for them the nursery rhymes which she had set to music. It was for her grandchildren that she made up the wonderful story of Flibbertigibbet, the naughty imp who came down the chimney and set the whole village by the ears. It was a musical story, and she always told it seated at the piano. Music and words were all her own, and when she played the jig, everyone wanted to dance, just like the people in the story. She was as full of fun as she was of wisdom and goodness, and there was no other fun like hers. So the long golden afternoon passed, and evening came. She died on the 11th day of October, 1910. The lives of husband and wife together had covered more than a century. You have seen, when the sun has set in a clear sky, how the light lingers, first in the west, then broadening and brightening over hill and dale, till all the world is bathed in golden glory. So the light of these two lives, and of other good and great lives, may shine for you and for me, brightening the path before us and helping us on our way.